Well, I'm very thankful that I can be here today. Thankful for the Lord's blessings to all of us. Good to see each one here. So glad that we have each one of us to fellowship with. I have a thought this today that trust the Lord will help us express it in a way that not only will be relevant, but that it'll be something we can take with us. So I've been reading and studying some here in James, the fifth chapter. Been on my mind pretty heavy recently. I'd like to look at a couple verses. We mentioned a few thoughts this past Wednesday night, but I'd like to look at the 17th and the 18th verse, James chapter 5. It says, Elias was a man subject to like passions as we are, and he prayed earnestly that it might not rain, and it rained not on the earth by the space of 3 years and 6 months. He prayed again, and the heaven gave rain, and the earth brought forth her fruit. So Elias, this name here, is the somehow between the Hebrew and the Greek and the English, got changed a little bit. In the Old Testament, we know him as Elijah. And Elijah was the one that confronted the prophets of Baal and posed the contest, if you will, if you'll accept that terminology, of preparing sacrifices and determining who the real God was by the one that answered by fire. I think the anticipation was that the fire that would fall from heaven would light the wood, and that the wood would then burn up the sacrifice. So both of them had their own time to prepare those sacrifices, we know, and when God answered by fire, we would say today he nuked it. He vaporized that thing. He burned up the wood, the stone, the sacrifice, the water. I think there was a charred hole in the ground for that sacrifice. There was absolutely no question about the reality of Elijah's God, of the true God of heaven. But I'm very fascinated with a little phrase that's in this passage of scripture we read. It says, Elias was a man subject to like passions as we are. And that's the focus that I want us to dwell on today. And I'm going to write something here on the board. So the two words that I've written on the board are personal awareness. Personal awareness. Elijah was a man with like passions like we are. He was aware that although God answered his prayer and responded to the things that he prayed about, that he was no different than other people. And we begin to think about this. Not only was this an amazing story and account in Elijah's life. But after this event, three different times, God provided literal food for Elijah, once by ravens, once by a widow that had nothing, and once by an angel. There was a time that he felt that he was at his wit's end corner and he was trying to escape, and an angel touched him on the shoulder and said, "Get up, eat, you got a journey ahead of you." And when he looked up, there was a meal prepared and there was water to drink that hadn't been there before, but the angel provided it. Now, by the third time that God provided literal food for me, it would be rather difficult for us as a human to not begin to think that we're special. All right? If you prayed that it wouldn't rain for until you said, "I'll pray for rain," and there was a 3.5 year drought, and then when you prayed, God sent rain enough that it wasn't just a little shower. It was an abundance of rain, is what the scripture calls it. And then he fed you three times, miraculously, three different ways. And then you remember how Elijah left this world? In a chariot of fire. Now, we all look on and say Elijah was a special man, wouldn't we? And it wasn't Elijah speaking in the New Testament there in James when James said Elias was a man subject to like passions as we are. But you know, I believe that if James could have spoke to us in the New Testament, if he could speak to us today, he would say, "I'm a man just like you are." The Lord miraculously worked during my lifespan, and I'm grateful for it, but I was no different than the other people. I was subject to the same type of things. I want us to turn to another place and look at Acts, the 14th chapter. And this is another place that it would have been pretty easy for us as humanity to begin to be elevated in our own personal opinion of ourselves. It says here in Acts, the 14th chapter, and begin reading in the 12th verse. It says, "And they called Barnabas Jupiter and Paul Mercurius, because he was the chief speaker." Now what had happened is that Paul and Barnabas had came into this Gentile city. In this Gentile city, they worship Jupiter and Mercurius, and you know, they all of those Greek gods, they were worshiping them in idolatrous practices. And he brought the gospel message, and there were people that were responding to that. And in amongst that, there was a man, whether he had given his heart to the Lord before or after, I don't know, but there was a man that had been born crippled. And Paul and Barnabas spoke to him and healed him by the power of God. And the man, it says, he leaped and ran. Not only did he his skeletal person was restored, but he learned to walk and to leap and to run instantaneously. The Lord done that miraculous healing at their hand, and the people saw that and said, "Well, these are the gods. They've come right down here to us." So they began. They called Paul, Barnabas Jupiter and Paul Mercurius. This is the 12th verse, because he was the chief speaker. Then the priests of Jupiter, which were before their city, brought oxen and garlands under the gates and would have done sacrifice with the people. They're fixing to prepare a sacrifice for Paul and Barnabas. And which, when the apostles, Barnabas and Paul, heard of, they rent their clothes, which is a sign of distress and a sign of sorrow, and they ran among the people, or mixed and mingled. They didn't stay set apart. They come in and rub shoulders with other people, and they crying out and saying, "Sirs, why do you do this? We are also men of like passions with you." Sounds like pretty much the same phrase, doesn't it? We're the same type of man as you are. We have to contend with the same things. We are not gods. He says, and preach unto you that ye should turn from these vanities unto the living God, which made heaven and earth and the sea and all the things that are therein, who on times past suffered all nations to walk in their own ways. So he said, the reason we come, the message that we have, the thing that we want to impart to you is that God, the one that created all of this, wants to be able to deliver you from all of this wicked, perverted, distorted worship practices that you have. We are just the messenger. We're just the one hauling the goods, so to speak. Without God working through our lives, we would be just like you. That's what Paul was saying. Elijah, he would be just like everybody else if it wasn't for the power of God. So I ask us this morning, how aware are we of who we are? I wrote up there, personal awareness. We have all been in situations where someone has helped us be aware of something about us. We could be in a public setting, and something could be wrong with our clothing, and maybe someone, we could be oblivious to it. You know what that means? We don't know. Maybe we got dressed in the dark and we don't know that we put on one brown shoe and one black shoe. I see people do that on purpose now, out in public, or at least I guess they do. Either that or a lot of people got dressed in the dark. But we could be getting ready to maybe stand up in front of somebody, and somebody said, "Oh, you didn't button your shirt right." You men know what I'm talking about. You ever button your shirt where you got off a knot? You got off a notch and one side was up. We've probably all done that at some point. We was in a hurry and we buttoned our shirt up, and then just maybe our spouse or our child or something said, "You need to check your shirt." we weren't aware of that. We can have I've had things happen on my job to where something splatters, some kind of oily thing. I, put an air hose in something, and I get splattered with speckles of black oil or something like that. And then as time goes on, I forget that happened. And now that I have mostly white hair, I can have it in my hair and on my face, and I don't see any of it because I'm not looking. I'm not aware of it. So I would like to remind us that there is something very important about us being aware of who we are. aware of what our appearance is. In our bedroom, we have a mirror that is, my wife calls it a full-length mirror, I think. Anyway, she can go and stand in front of that mirror and hopefully see what other people sees. I mean, we don't all see that. You know, if we stand in front of the mirror, we're going to do the things that make us look most attractive, right? But then when we're not in front of the mirror and we kind of relax, or something happens and we kind of frown or whatever, we don't always realize that we're doing that until somebody says to us, "What are you frowning about? Why are you slouching?" Or, "Stand up straight." Or, you know, we'll have all those. Sometimes people will make some comment about us. Maybe somebody says, "Maybe you ought to go look in the mirror." They probably think our face looks dirty. What does it mean to be personally aware, not just of our over my appearance, whether I got my shirt tail tucked in? Happens to me. You know, I can be going about my work and I can have my shirt tail tucked in on the front and hanging out in the back and not realize that it's happening. I can have speckles on my face. I think it's important that we are aware of where we stand before the Lord. And recognize, you know, I would love to see more demonstration of God's miraculous power. Whether it's lame people walking, whether it's sacrifices being consumed, I want to see that. I want to be in a place where God is free to function in that way. But I also want to be aware of where I stand and that I am not anything special. It's the power of God. And I want to be like Paul and Barnabas and point people to the Lord and not look on me. I'm special. It's because of me. No, it's not ever because of me that God is able to do what he does. It's because of his might and his power. I'm thinking this morning, taking this a little bit further, of how our actions and our words and how we communicate, how that, are we aware of what that's saying? Did you know you can be quiet and be communicating? Our silence sometimes communicates something. Sometimes silence is louder than the loudest person in the room. Maybe everybody in the room is anticipating you taking a position. Sometimes silence means approval. And sometimes silence means disapproval. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes a facial expression coupled with silence is a very loud message. If everybody in the room is expecting you to take a position opposing the loudmouth that's doing the talking, and you say nothing, many times that's interpreted as approval. Are we aware of that? And sometimes if we are quiet when others really need us to say amen or to show signs of support and we're quiet, it can convey a message of disapproval. Preachers are aware of these things. Congregation's real quiet. I'm not trying to put a straitjacket or impose anything on anybody this morning, but if the congregation is really quiet, sometimes that can be interpreted as acceptance and approval, and sometimes it can be interpreted as disapproval. Are we aware of our personal, are we personally aware of what we're saying? Of what we're portraying? Sometimes we can ask, you know what a pointed question is? Somebody have a definition for a pointed question? A prying question? Okay. What's that? A pointed question is looking for a specific answer. Okay? I think a pointed question also can mean that we ask a question with an obvious answer. So, was you sleeping in church? What's the obvious answer? Well, it could be yes. You see what I'm saying? You go up to somebody that was had their head down during the sermon, and you say, "Were you sleeping during church?" Well, the obvious answer that you're trying to get them to admit is, "Yes, I was asleep," or "I was dozing." Somebody, you meet somebody on the street or at a public gathering and they turn their head away when you walk by and you ask them, "Were you ignoring me?" That's a pointed question. You know, we can communicate our disapproval, approval. Are we aware that... Are we aware when we're asking personal pointed questions? I think some are not. And I'd like for us to consider, how many pointed questions do I ask? How many questions do... It's not an accusation of... You were ignoring me. It's a pointed question of, were you ignoring me? Are we aware of what... Oh, we don't accuse anybody, but we sure ask a lot of pointed questions. Are we aware of what we're doing? Well, I would never accuse somebody of being lazy. But maybe I would ask a pointed question, what were you doing on Saturday? Or what did you do when you got home from work? Or what do you do with all your spare time? We can ask these. Sometimes I'm not saying that we can't ever ask somebody, what did you do Saturday? Okay. But I want us not to feel guilty, but I want us to think about being aware of what we say, how we say it, and what we communicate when we don't say anything. You can be stoic, no expression, and not say anything, and yet you can be the one that communicates the strongest message. So am I personally aware? Am I talking incessantly? That's the other end. Am I personally aware that I can't just make a point and stop? I can't make a comment and stop. Sometimes we're not aware. Somebody, I know that I have kind of crazy eyebrows, and I know when I need a haircut, whether I look in the mirror or not, because I've got one eyebrow that wants to grow down, and it starts obstructing my vision. I can comb it over and give it 10 minutes, and it's back down right in front of my eye. I need a haircut, and they got to trim my eyebrows too. The other side grows the other way. It goes up, one side grows down. But I don't even have to look in the mirror, and I know I need a haircut. But there's other times that we're not aware. And maybe we don't know what it looks like to somebody else. Maybe we don't know what it looks like when we're just silent. Maybe we don't know what it looks like when we repeat ourselves three times. And Elijah and Paul said, we're just like you are. They were aware of where they stood. They were aware that the power was not with them. I'd like to read about somebody that wasn't aware. I'd like to go to 1 Kings, the 12th chapter. And this man was not aware of the consequences that was fixing to happen. Because I don't believe he wanted the result that he got. In 1 Kings, it's the 12th chapter, and we're going to begin reading in the 13th verse. The setting here, maybe a little bit before this, the setting here is David had been king. When he died, Solomon, his son, became king. And when he died, the kingdom automatically went to his son. And until the people were carried off into captivity by the Babylonians, there was a descendant of David on the throne. All right? So we see here in verse 12 of chapter 12, it says, so Jeroboam and the people came to Rehoboam. Rehoboam is Solomon's son. The third day as a king had appointed. So they had asked him a question. Are you going to be difficult to please? And that's really, it's part of our discussion this morning, but it's not the most important thing. All the details of it anyway. And he had told Jeroboam, which was a representing the people, at least 10 tribes of the people, and he said, let me think about this. I'll get back with you. Come again in 3 days. So they came back in 3 days. And as the king had appointed, saying, come to me again the third day. And the king answered the people roughly and forsook the old men's counsel that they gave him. The old men had told him, lighten up. Your father was difficult to please. And these people have a legitimate concern. They have a legitimate question. And you need to take heed. You need to listen to them. You need to make some adjustments. And you remember what the young people told him? Make it harder on them. Teach them a lesson. It says they didn't. He forsook the old men's counsel, and he spake to them after the counsel of the young men, saying, my father made your yoke heavy, and I will add to your yoke. My father also chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scorpions. Wherefore the king hearkened not unto the people, for the cause was from the Lord, that he might perform his saying, which the Lord spake by Ahijah the Shilonite, after Jeroboam the son of Nebat. What happened? The kingdom became divided. 10 tribes made Jeroboam, the one that had represented them, king over them. And Rehoboam was only king over 2 tribes instead of all 12. But he was not aware that what he was going to do was going to cause that. Sometimes we are not aware of what we're communicating, how we're portraying ourselves, what we're saying. Some people will make the comment, if you say yes to one thing, you're saying no to something else. When we say no to something, more than likely we're saying yes to something else. So, you see what we're saying here? Sometimes we feel like we're just saying no, but in reality we're saying yes to something else. Are we aware of what we're saying yes to? Or if it's the other way around, are we aware of what we're saying no to? If I say yes to my work, am I saying no to my family? Am I aware of that? If I say no to going to service, am I saying yes to some selfish indulgence? Am I aware of what I'm setting myself up for? We can set ourselves up for failure, right? And the easiest way I know how to demonstrate or to talk about this is take your cars, because that's what I work on is cars. And I will tell you that if you never check your air pressure in your tires, you never check your oil, you never do any maintenance, and all you do is put gas in the tank, that you're setting yourself up for failure. Are you aware of that? There's people out there that's not aware of that. Or at least I think they're not aware, because I see them on my end of the business quite regularly. They were never aware that you should do certain things for maintenance. And they just kept driving. Because I'm paranoid about stuff like that, I saw a couple young men yesterday down at the campground doing some work, and I saw them get 2 cans. They went to the gas station and got gas, and they come back and fill the tanks up with gas, and they got on the mowers and mowed. And you know what my question was? I wonder if they checked the oil. She's lived with me long enough, she knows what I was thinking. Did they check the oil, or did they just pour gas in it? I didn't call them, I didn't chase after them, I didn't stop them, I didn't say, check the oil. I'm suspicious they didn't. And if they didn't, the reason that they didn't was probably because, not because they weren't capable of doing that, they just weren't aware of that. So my question and my burden today is, are we aware of what I'm doing? Was Rehoboam aware that he was fixing to distance himself from a large portion of the Israelite nation? I don't think he was aware. I think if somebody had tried to make him aware, he would have ignored them. Honestly, I think he would have. He was not conscious of what he was doing. So my burden today is for us to consider what we're doing. Maybe get us a full-length emotional mirror. A full-length mirror. Maybe, you know, most of us, I don't know really how to do it, but most of us have a phone that will record. Maybe we ought to record a conversation we have with somebody and go back and listen to it and listen to ourselves. It might be revealing. We might not be aware of the things that we do when we're talking. I've told you this story before, and I'll tell you again because I think it fits here. I worked with a man that dealt with the public. He was a service writer that greeted people and took their concerns and wrote the tickets up and all of that kind of stuff at the dealership that I worked at. And I don't believe this man was aware of what he was doing. I really don't think he was aware. He was very successful. He was one of those that I felt like could sell ice cubes to an Eskimo. You know what that comment means. He was good at his job. But he was unaware that he picked his nose. And he's a full-grown man. I mean, he was my age. And we both had children about the same age. And he would be talking to somebody, and the next thing you know, it looked like half his finger disappeared up in his nose. It was like, don't do that in front of people. I don't look good. But he was unaware. And if it was a little high-pressure situation and somebody was being emotional with him, it seemed like he got more aggressive with his undesirable, unaware. You know, we can do the same thing. We can scratch our ear. We can rub our nose. Maybe pull on our ear. Or maybe we can twitch a little bit. I don't know what you see in me because I'm unaware of that. If you need to talk to me later, I'm saying it's okay. All right? Let's just do it one-on-one. That's all I ask. I'd rather you wait and you can call me or get me by myself and say, Brother Dan, I know you're not aware, but, and then you tell me, okay? And I'm just going to make this commitment to you. I'm going to do my best to change because I know there's things that we all do that that we're unaware of. We do. Maybe it's the way we look at people. Maybe there's something we convey to others that appears that we're condescending when we're not intending to be condescending. Maybe we convey mistrust or approval when that's not our intent, either way. But it's something that we're unaware of. We're all unaware of something. And I believe that's one of the reasons that Elijah and Paul both said, we're men with like passions. I mean, every one of us here this morning have something about us that we're unaware of. You know, I don't know what, I'm just being very, very down to earth. Yesterday I was very, had gotten very sweaty. And dirty too. Dusty. By the end of the day, I knew that I needed a shower. And I don't know what I smelled like because I couldn't smell myself. I mean, I could try a little bit, but I'm not real sure. I'm sure that it was much more obvious to my wife than it was to me. Much more, because I wasn't as aware. And we can have those things that we're not aware of. And I think we ought to try to help one another in as tactful a manner as possible. But we also ought to give one another a little bit of liberty to be different. Okay? But I'm really, my message this morning is about us addressing the things that can be disruptive that we're unaware of. What am I doing that's hindering the cause of God? I'd like to look, in closing, on some verses that's in the book of Psalms. I'd look to Psalms. I won't make a lot of comment on each one, but let's go to Psalms 106 in verse 33. It says here, because they provoked his spirit, so that he spake unadvisedly with his lips. Let's back up a little bit. Verse 28. And joined themselves also unto Baal Peor, and ate the sacrifices of the dead. Thus they provoked him to anger with their inventions, and the plague break in upon them. Then stood up Phinehas and executed judgment, and so the plague was stayed. And that was counted unto him for righteousness unto all generations forevermore. They angered him also at the waters of strife, so that it went ill with Moses for their sakes. Because they provoked his spirit. Whose spirit did they provoke? Moses' spirit. They provoked Moses' spirit. The people did. So that he spake inadvisedly with his lips. Do you remember what he said? Ho, ye rebels, must I get you water out of a rock? You know, sometimes we're not aware of how we're asking or asking for something. And sometimes we're not aware because we feel provoked of how we're answering. It can happen in the home. It can happen on the job. It can happen in a congregation. And I just want to ask us to stop and think. What does this look like? If somebody that didn't know me was listening, would they be shocked? Or would they be amazed, or would they think it's okay? This is a challenge to me. How do I speak to my children? How do I speak to my spouse? How do I speak to the ones I go to service with? And would I be surprised if God spoke to me like that? I'd like to turn to Psalms 141 and verse 3. Psalms 141 and verse 3. It says, "Set a watch, O Lord, before my mouth. Keep the door of my lips." Lord, help me to think about not only what I'm saying, but how I'm saying it. Help me to be aware, personally aware. I worked with another man that I believe was aware, but he was, everywhere this man went, a level of chaos and racket went with him. And to demonstrate that, I worked next to the door, the entrance door into the shop at this place. And if I was at work and already engaged in what I was doing, and he come in, whether it was first thing in the morning or after lunch, and he had went down to the burger joint or wherever, and when he come in the door, he always slammed the door, for one thing, and he immediately was talking. And he came in and he had this, the pitch of his voice and the decibels that he used to communicate was always got your attention. And if by the time the door crashed closed, he would be saying something like, "Hey, Dan, what are you working on today?" And it would just, he would just rattle like that everywhere he went. He just made noise. And I think he was aware of it, but are we aware? Do we cause, when we come into a room, do we bring a soothing sensation or do we bring a racket? Are we aware of our impact when we come into a conversation? When we come into a conversation, does everybody expect things to go off the rails, or can we start coming to a conclusion? Is there going to be, are we going to be pouring gas on the fire, or are we going to be putting the fire out? And then the last verse I want to read for us this morning is Psalms 19. And you've heard this one too, I'm sure. Psalms 19 and verse 14, it says, "Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer." Lord, most of all, I want my words, I want my actions, I want what I communicate to be acceptable in your sight. And if there's something I'm not aware of that I need to be aware of, Lord, help me to see that. I'm thankful when somebody comes and tells me, "Hey, your shirt collar is all wrinkled up." Sometimes, and I never want my wife to feel that she can't do this. She'll come up and make an adjustment to my collar. You know, it may be turned up on one side a little bit, and I'm oblivious to it. I want her to always feel she has the liberty to adjust my collar if it needs adjusted. I think I think we just, I want us to just really consider ourselves. It's the only thing I can change anyway, but am I personally aware of what I communicate, how I present myself? Is it acceptable? This psalm said, this word in this psalm said, let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight. It didn't say it was perfect in the sight of the Lord here. Acceptable. What's acceptable? Are we acceptable? Or are we abrasive to others, to the cause? We want the cause of God to go forward, don't we? We want others to say, I don't know what they got, but I want some of that. I want something that seems to bring calmness and order and peace to life. You pray for me. I want to be more aware. And not only do I want to be more aware, I want who I am to be acceptable in the sight of the Lord. You pray for me.